Almanac. Then he is an almanac. Is it an almanac or an almanac? That's what it said. Now, the Jews have always been interested in the lost tribes. They have in their almanac. Whatever happened to the 10 lost tribes? We're live right now, in case you're wondering. Nice to have joined Portland, but they're part of the family now. Bay City and Saginaw and Augusta. This Sunday night, we join, beginning 7 days a week, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Still moving out in faith. Whatever happened to the 10 lost tribes? Now, there are people who always say, well, there weren't really 10 of them, only 9.5. But being a nitpicker, when we find 9.5, we'll worry about that other half. Right now, we're just going to look for the whole bunch, whatever's left. Perhaps the most notorious of those who search for their long-lost brethren among the Jews was a 9th-century merchant traveler, Eldad Hadani, the Danite, whom one authority, a Jewish authority, characterizes as a daring impostor crowned with an unexpected success. In his diary, which achieved widespread popularity for centuries and elicited much learned commentary, Eldad identified himself as a member of the lost tribe of Dan and declared that his own tribe, along with Gad, Asher, and Naphtali, were settled in the land of Cush, Ethiopia, and vicinity, where they lived in impressive circumstances, their wealth regularly replenished with the spoils of phenomenally successful military exploits. Incidentally, it says parenthetically, these four tribes were probably not grouped by accident. According to Genesis 30, their ancestors were Jacob's son by his concubines. It's too cold in here, Mike. Does that word cool us off, I guess? Dan, Gad, Asher, and Naphtali. These were Jacob's sons by his concubines, Bilhah and Zilpah. You know, you got to give old Jacob credit. It's kind of hard to get romantic about anybody with names like that. He had his faults, but he had his achievements, too. Bilhah and Zilpah. Of course, I get the idea sometimes he wasn't too particular because he didn't know one woman from the other when he started out. I mean, he spent the whole night there with Leah, and he thought it was Rachel. He must not have done much name calling. Names apparently weren't that important to him. Interesting fellow, this Jacob. He had this duty, you know, to mankind. Stars and sand. I mean, you know, you ever take a walk on the beach lately? Just look. been nice and sunny these last few days in California. You walk down that beach and start counting sand. And make that your task. One man, one family assignment. To produce kids more numerous than the sand. There wasn't any handmaiden safe in there. The perimeter of their gaze. Bilha and Zilpah, didn't matter what the names were. If they were within reach, divine imperative. I've said this before, but the women were at a disadvantage. No headaches, no I'm too tired, none of this stuff. Divine imperative. I mean, you know, from morning to night, those old smelly tent dwellers, it was attack! There are some fantastic stories hidden underneath the pages of God's holy word. Now, no one ever pauses even to ask the question, why do we call it the Holy Bible? I mean, to tell you, if some of the goings-on between the covers of that holy book comprise holiness, it, by a definition, I never heard. I mean, if you really, you know, most people don't do this. They're too reverent or something. But if you stop and think about it, there are... Don't think about it. Don't think. There are some terrible things going on encompassed between the covers called holy. If that's holy, you can about do anything and it's holy. I mean, some of the things they do in that book, I've thought about it. My mommy never called it holy. And I had another purpose in mind tonight. We got hung up here on Bilha and Zilpah. Bilha and Zilpah. Not Jacob, he was a rounder. You know what a rounder is? If you don't know, I ain't going to tell you. Just read the Bible and read Jacob's life. You'll know what a rounder is. Now, the people I'm going to talk about tonight, they had holy days where they read the lives of Abraham, Jacob. Great examples. Now, I think about things like that. They call it a holy Bible. The Bible's got a lot of unholy things in it. Amazing what man can do to cover something up with the word holy. It's just the Bible. That record Well, now, if you mean set apart, which is what the word holy means, I guess it's a set apart record, but that isn't what they meant when they put holy on it. I'd like to call it the real life Word of God. That's what it is. I mean, this old boy, he's a rounder. Eldad also knew, well, let's just leave him. He's not the subject tonight. He's interesting. He's a lot more interesting than Isaac. All Isaac did was dig wells. I mean, old Jacob, he's just a blind pauper in a tent. Isaac, he's a well digger. Isaac's dull. Old Sin and Jacob's interesting. David and Jacob. Now, there's a couple of interesting guys. Boy, did they know how to sin. I'll tell you something. The church has produced dullness. Well, you say, did God like their sinning? No, he liked the sinner that was sinning, but he didn't like their sinning. But he figured if he could get that fire channel the right direction, it'd be worth something. But a big old gob of paste, you can't do much with it. Just stick it on something. Well, let's continue, folks. Am I boring you? I rather like Jacob, though. He's an interesting subject. I have to teach you 11 o'clock at night, 3 in the morning. Jacob's the subject. Somebody, I got an answer. Those people call and say, what's the purpose of this program? It's to cause all America to go to bed with me and then keep them awake. You can't figure that out, you're hopeless. Jacob, he was a rounder. And yet, the New Testament declares God made up his mind even before they were born, before the little brats jumped out. Esau I hate, Jacob I love. Now, there's a text the abortionists ought to grab hold of. God hated Esau, but still let him come out. I mean, you know, I'm not taking sides. I'm just helping them out. If they're going to... There's a lot of wasted texts in the Scripture because people don't know how to use them. There's a real powerful, powerful text for those that are against abortion. God hated Esau, but he still let him escape. He didn't kill him. That'll be in one of Jerry Falwell's letters before long. Paid to sit up late tonight. Got a little more research done for him. Now let's continue. Hard to leave Jacob. He's entertaining. There ain't nobody in God's earth going to convince me he didn't know that that was Leah in that tent. That conniving old rat, he figured, I'll get two for the price of one. You know. If you're going to yell foul, you do it, you know, right at the start. Not after a whole night of cavorting and the sun comes up. I just want you to get acquainted with the likes of these biblical characters that God in his grace took on home. It wasn't for their spotless, righteous, holy behavior. Doesn't that give you hope? Well, anyway, his concubines. Of course, you know, church I grew up in, most of them didn't know what a concubine was. They thought it was sort of a... Well, it has a spiritual word, you know, sound to it. Concubines, if you don't know what it means, sound spiritual. That word, con, you know, means withness. Eldad also knew where the other six tribes were to be found, he said. He had encountered each in his wanderings through Arabia and had discovered their men to be not only learned, pious, wealthy, and wise, but also valorous warriors. He offered an eyewitness report on the river Sambatyon, the Sabbath River, beyond which, according to Talmudic tradition, the ten tribes had been exiled. The river, it was generally believed, flowed only 6 days of the week, resting on the Sabbath. And that was indeed what Eldad found. Moreover, on Friday evening, it had been surrounded with fire or thick clouds in some versions of the diary, so no one could even approach it. I'm reading that because we're hearing a lot about the philosophy tonight. News for the last two nights have been devoted to the tribe of Dan coming out of Ethiopia. Thought it might be interesting to give a little background to the news. By the way, there's an article I cut out of, or somebody cut it out for me, out of the San Jose Mercury News, Sunday, July 31st, 1983. That goes clear back to the Stone Age. Waleka, Ethiopia, by Robert J. Rosenthal, Knight Ridder News Service. The rabbi led the way to a one-room mud and straw hut with chipped, whitewashed walls and corrugated iron roof. He covered his head with a prayer shawl and unlocked the hut, his synagogue. It was Friday, and the Sabbath would soon begin for Yahir Ben-Uri and the black Jews of Ethiopia. Yahir Ben-Uri is rabbi of Waleka, home to 35 Falasha families. I may tell you later in this article, but Falasha simply means stranger. Well, that's one of the meanings of the word Hebrew. Amazing how words change from language to language. The Falashas are Jews who have practiced their ancient, isolated form of Judaism for centuries. No one knows how they got to Ethiopia, just how long they've been here, or how many still live in scattered villages in the rugged Simeon Mountains north of Addis Ababa. In Amharic, Falasha means, yeah, they're saying it, strangers, or one without a place. The black Jews were once said to number 500,000 in Ethiopia. According to one theory, they're the descendants of the union of the Queen of Sheba and King Solomon, who produced Menelik the First, also the first Ethiopian emperor. It is said that when Menelik returned from Solomon's court in Jerusalem to his mother's court in Aksum, he brought with him his father's religion. Am I born you? Another theory is that the Falashas are descendants of the Jews, it's still too cold in here, of the Jews scattered in the diaspora 2,500 years ago. Whatever their origins, there's been no question that the Falashas and Judaism have been in Ethiopia well over 1,000 years. Rabbi Ben-Uri's congregation numbers about 200. I got a ring in here. You hear it? Rabbi Ben-Uri's congregation numbers about 200. The village looks like most Ethiopian peasant villages, subsistence poor and dirty. What distinguishes it is the sign of the tribe, the Star of David, affixed to the roofs of the huts and the whitewashed building on the rise. The floor of the synagogue, turn that thing plumb off, The floor of the synagogue was covered by straw mats. Thanks be to Jesus and the hands of Mike. A switch on the wall. Been blowing straight out of Bay City, Michigan tonight. The Star of David affixed to the roofs of the huts and the whitewashed building on the rise. The floor of the synagogue was covered by straw mats, and the eastern corner of the room was a small wooden case holding a Torah, the book of Jewish law. An old man, barefoot and wrapped in a white robe that hung just below his knees, slowly entered the room. He wore a turban-like wrap on his head, leaned on a staff. The old man was Tefarhun ben Baruch, Rabbi Ben Uri's 80-year-old uncle. He had come to see what strangers were in this place and to listen to his nephew. Now, Ben means son. Why, some Orthodox Jews, as we say, look for two messiahs, one who suffers. Messiah ben Joseph, son of Joseph, and will be killed in the Armageddon by that particular view by Antichrist, the anti-Messiah, though they give him a different name, and Rabbi ben Judah, or rather Messiah ben Judah, who will set up his kingdom. True to that form of identity, Rabbi ben Uri means son of Uri. Rabbi ben Uri is 50 and has a full black and white beard. Two furrows formed in his brow as he talked about the changes he's seen in his people. For centuries, the Ethiopian Orthodox Church attempted to convert the Falashias to Christianity. There was often war between Ethiopian Christians and the Falashias. At the end of the 16th century, the Falashias were driven into the rugged area in and around the Simeon Mountains. Their property was confiscated. They were not allowed to own land. The Falashias became craftsmen, iron workers, and pottery makers, skills that were less valued than ownership of land. Through the 44-year reign of Emperor Haile Selassie, who was ousted by a socialist revolution in 1974, the Falashias could not own land. They lived a life of basic survival and poverty that all Ethiopian peasants endured. More in that newspaper article, but one of the books that I think we ought to add to the bookstore, Mike, is Dan Ross's little book, St. Martin's Press, Acts of Faith. This book seeks out the fringe members of the Jewish religious faith. Now, very easy to assume the Catholics are just a monolithic, unified group. They are more so than most. But Hans Kuhn and his stand as the chief academic Catholic theologian resisting the relatively recent viewpoint of the Catholic Church on the infallibility of the Pope when he makes his official pronouncements, resulting in his ostracism within that body, reveal it's not quite as monolithic as some people think. We're prone to think only Protestants have many different sects or faiths. Splinters. And the Jews are just absolutely viewed as monolithic, hook-nosed, curly-headed, wearing beanies, going to synagogues, keeping the same feast days, all alike. Not so. This little book deals with Mexico's Jewish Indians. And then the not-so-secret Jews of Portugal, the Muranos. During the Middle Ages, the king in Portugal offered conversion or death. And then he baptized them by one mass spraying of water on everybody, or throwing of water on everybody. They would secretly accept Christianity, or rather they would openly accept Christianity and secretly remain as Jews. The Chuitos of Majorca, the Muslim Moranos of Mashhad, the wife-swapping Muslims waiting for a Jewish Messiah, the Dome of Turkey, the Samaritans, the Karaites, the Chinese Jews, the Beni Israel of Bombay. These were splinter groups. And when Israel formed itself into the state, Israel, it became a problem. Because the law of return opens the country to any Jew. Therefore, what is a Jew became important. When the great Scottish explorer, I'm going to read from Acts of Faith by Dan Ross, St. Martin's Press. I like my people to be a little more educated than the news commentators. And since this is very much in the news right now, I thought I'd deal with it tonight. When the great Scottish explorer James Bruce returned to Britain in 1773, claiming to have traveled the length of the Blue Nile. Turn the lights down. This is not scary, but it's just turn them down. Claiming to have traveled the length of the Blue Nile from Ethiopia to Egypt, he was met with outright scorn and ridicule. Few believed his outlandish tales of Ethiopian natives who cut steaks from the flanks of living cattle and ate them raw. Or wore, that would have sort of shocked a very proper Englishman or Scotchman. Few believed his outlandish tales of Ethiopian natives who cut steaks from the flanks of living cattle and ate them raw. Kind of hard on a cow. Or wore rings through their noses instead of their ears. Dr. Samuel Johnson set the tone for all England when he declared he didn't believe Bruce had ever been in Ethiopia. Offended, Bruce sulked in Scotland for 17 years before publishing his travels to discover the source of the Nile, which became an immediate sensation. Even then, it was considered more fiction than fact. That verdict has since been reversed. Today, it is considered a classic of exploration literature, and its author, in the words of the noted Ethiopist Edward Uhlendorf, one of the great universal savants and men of action of the 18th century. His travelogue was so precise that later explorers were able to use it as a guidebook. Thought to be among Bruce's most fantastic inventions, or lies, was his description of one of the stranger nations he came across, a tribe of black Jews called the Falasha. "I did not spare my utmost pains in inquiring into the history of this curious people," Bruce wrote, "and I lived in friendship with several, esteemed the most knowing and learned among them, if any of them deserved to be so called, and I'm persuaded, as far as they knew, they told me the truth." We now know, of course, that Bruce's account of the Falashas was remarkably accurate. He must have gone to great lengths to obtain his information. His book, which dwells at length on Falasha history, conforms closely to what we have learned in the intervening 200 years. Bruce was the first to unearth their own explanation of their origin. I want you to notice the Scotsman did this for more than just personal racial background identity. It's Scottish astronomers that uncovered those passages and their meanings of the pyramid. I mean, these people, these Irish, Scots, and English people, they covered the world. It's as though they were men of destiny to uncover the hidden. Now, let's go on. That's another subject. His book, which was a link on Appalachian history, conforms closely to what we've learned in the intervening 200 years. Bruce was the first to unearth their own explanation of their origin, supported only by tradition, he carefully noted. He reported that Appalachians claim to have come from Palestine in the retinue of Menelik, the son of Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. In this, Bruce pointed out, they perfectly agree with the Abyssinians, otherwise known as the Ethiopians, in the story of the Queen of Saba, or Sheba, who they say was a Jewess, and her nation Jews. The story of Solomon and Sheba, somewhat embroidered, was and still is the national myth of Ethiopia. The Ethiopian version is more explicit than the biblical. Well, the biblical, you know, I don't know why Hollywood continues to write these lousy scripts when there's so much existing in history. The Ethiopian version is more explicit than the biblical. Well, that's an accomplishment. Where the Bible only hints at a sexual liaison, do you read the Bible, Dan? You ever read the Song of Solomon, my friend? Where the Bible... Drop an anvil on his head and he calls it a hint. Where the Bible only hints at a sexual liaison, Ethiopian chronicles describe a seduction in detail. You heard that in the background. That's one of our more famous bureaucratic jokes, where he was forced to compile a sentence in which he used four words in it. Decal. Decal. Defeat. D-E-F-E-A-T. Defense, I'm not trying to think it up without having to say it in my mind. Decal, defeat, defense. What's the detail? That's it. Detail, D-E-T-A-I-L. And it says, sentence that these idiots over here interrupted my very profound teaching with tonight, showing that they've got some kind of embryonic attachment to bureaucrats that bothers me. Decal jumped over defense, defeat before detail. Shut up. The Ethiopian chronicles describe a seduction in detail. Decal jumped over defense, defeat before detail. That's seduction in detail. I don't want to touch that another minute. I want to go right on by it. That's awful. Seduction in detail. Well, I'm not going to. That's all I need. I'm leaving defeat alone and all the rest of it. Am I boring you? I mean to tell you, it's just dangerous to read anything in today's world. Ethiopian chronicles describe a seduction in detail. What's there to describe? It's already been done. Lord, help us. Oh, blessed holy angels, come purify the air. What are you fanning for? The queen left Solomon immediately afterward. Why not? The queen left Solomon immediately afterward. Continues this legend. And 9 months later, well, at least one thing's accurate, 9 months later gave birth to a son named Menelik. That's what I said. I mean, I can't believe I said it, but that's what it is right here. I mean, she gave birth to a son named Unmentionable. Menelik. That's worse than Bilhah and Zilpah. I need to perform a wedding ceremony. Do you, Menelik, take Bilhah here? As a grown man, Menelik. I mean, he must have been something else. If old Johnny Cash's boy named Sue got tough, what do you think Menelik? As a grown man, Menelik visited his father in Jerusalem. Menelik comes to Jerusalem. Before returning... Before returning, what I said, hold on a minute. Don't let... Hold on, that's what it said. Lord, help us now. We sure do need it now. I even lost my page. I always lose my page, and you don't want me to finish, do you? As a grown man, Menelik visited his father in Jerusalem. Before returning to found a dynasty which ruled intermittently until the overthrow of Emperor Haile Selassie in 1974. The Ethiopians were converted to Christianity, legend and historians agree, by Syrian missionaries, which makes them Monophysites. You know what a Monophysite is? Sure you do. A Monophysite is a Monophysite. Monophysite Christian. Remember when we taught on the distinction between the Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church and the Monophysite controversy? At least the church fights in those days had fancy names. And most of the church fights I've seen are over board elections or the way the preacher's wife dresses. I mean, give the early church credit. I mean, they at least fought over issues like Gnosticism and Monophysitism. What are you counting me down for? I'm just getting warmed up to this subject. Well, I can't give you any more details. Got to leave some people right now. Give me some music. I believe I'm boring you to death. Do you want me to continue with this history of the Falashas? You do, get in the telephone, not in the telephone, on the telephone. Talk to me. The number is 1-800-338-3030. Am I boring you?
Be
Flint, Michigan. What is Doc going to talk on tonight? This little podium. This chair. I think I'm talking on this chair. Am I on this chair, Lee? And that's what I'm going to talk on tonight. If I were over there on the camera, I'd talk on it. What's with Fort Worth and Dallas? I haven't heard you mention these cities. That's what I've been wondering. Where's Fort Worth and Dallas? God, isn't that nice? John, Rockville, Tennessee, near Murfreesboro. How in the world did you survive, sir, living that close to where Craig Lamp used to live? My Lord, God of mercy, give this man a hand. I mean, he has endured an outstanding survival course. That's Craig, not... Yeah, move it over. You get... Can't you tell who... Other way. Right there in the blue shirt. He gets... Those pocket brothers get all the pictures they need. I want you to get a picture of the martyr from Murfreesboro. Man, it's marvelous. Anybody can survive living that close to where Craig Lamp lived. Nice to have you tonight. It's nice to have anyone that comes in from out of town to help us on the phones. I am reading about the Flashes. Great Scottish explorer James Bruce returned to Britain in 1773, claiming to have traveled the length of the Blue Nile from Ethiopia to Egypt. Met with scorn, sought for 17 years, published his travels to discover the source of the Nile, became an immediate sensation and the most fantastic lie in the minds of some that he told was about the Flashes. Now, I'm reading from the book by Dan Ross, Acts of Faith, which lets some of us non-Jewish people find out that the Jewish faith has got some diversity in it in terms of people and background and the streams that flow into their particular brand of the Jewish faith. Posed a problem for the new state Israel because by the law of the return, every Jew could return to this national homeland. The Flashes claimed to be Jews. Bruce found them, the Scottish explorer, 1773. 17 years later, writes his book. Now, answer the phone over at King's House 1, because we've stopped answering in here. In his book, he pointed out that the Flashes claimed to have come from Palestine in the retinue of Menelik, son of Solomon, Queen of Sheba. The story of Solomon and Sheba, somewhat embroidered, was and still is the national myth of Ethiopia. Now, you folks that just tuned in Reno, and in Los Angeles and San Diego, you will never know what you missed in the previous hour. I mean, we spent a whole hour trying to get through two paragraphs.